right, Devin Allman, thanks so much for talking to me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you sing, write, play guitar, and produce. Music is obviously in your blood. Did it come as naturally as it sounds, or did you have to work hard to achieve your musicality?
That's a good question. I think that the desire came really easy. You know, I was certainly really into music from a young age, from about 4 or 5. But I think, you know, with any kind of natural ability, you have to hone it. You have to spend the years, you know, what do they say? It takes 10,000 applied hours,
right,
to kind of become a master at something. So I think that that's with anything, you know, especially, you know, something like playing an instrument or singing, which is also, you know, really an instrument that's just inside of you. You know, it takes, you can have the natural ability, but it definitely takes the years to hone, you know, the ability into something that's, you know, reliable and stable and that you're confident in.
Absolutely. What was it like the first time you picked up the guitar?
Man, a lot of people think that, you know, because of who my father is, that that I was just born around guitars. And, you know, I didn't grow up with my father. I grew up with my mother. So first time I saw somebody play a guitar, like sitting in front of me, you know, I think I was probably really super young. But the first time it hit me and I saw the fingers hit the strings, I was about 12 or 13. And it was a friend of mine. And he was horrible. and I just remember going, man, if he can do that, I could do that.
I've got a chance here.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I was about 13 years old. I saw that kid, you know, play or butcher, rather, some Def Leppard song or something like that.
Yeah.
And was just like, man, I got to give this a go.
That's great. So you took inspiration from someone that was just horrible.
Yeah, but, you know, the inspiration was really the visual kind of connecting of the dots. Like, oh, that's it. These guys aren't wizards or magicians. You know, you put in the work and learn how to, you know, work your fingers on the thing.
Yeah, I mean, are you more about feel than technicality, you think, or kind of?
Absolutely, yeah. I've always been that guy. I've got about 3 licks I recycle, but, you know, I can play the hell out of them with feel.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I've always just been way more into, like, you know, make somebody cry with one note, you know, instead of, you know, wow them with 100 notes.
That's so cool. I love that. Yeah. So was the guitar the instrument that always interested you the most?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, at first I didn't really have a desire to become, you know, some impressive, you know, real proficient kind of cat. I really just wanted to learn my chords and voicings to become a writer. You know, it was really more of a vehicle to write songs with. And through the years, much later in life, actually, did I even start to play lead guitar. That was never even on my radar.
Really?
Wasn't interested in that at all. And in my first handful of bands, I had lead guitar players. So no need to even worry about it.
Right. What made you switch over to wanting to play lead?
Well, I don't know. I think as I got older, I got a little more confident in myself. I got a little bit more daring. You know, and then the lead guitar player in one of my bands split. And, you know, kind of decided that the road life wasn't, you know, for him. And at that point, I think I was playing 2 leads in a 2-hour show.
Wow.
And I thought, well, you know, here's my chance to try and do all the leads,
yeah,
which was pretty bold. And I was realistic about it. I gave myself 6 months, and I said, all right, in 6 months, if I'm doing the job okay, then great. And if not, I'll certainly replace this lead guitar player. And I started really playing a lot.
Yeah.
And this was like 10 years ago. So I was like 32 years old, 33 years old. And
wow,
pretty late in the game to start playing lead guitar, but I just made a mix of all my heroes, and I played and I played and I played and I played, and I was probably clocking in 5 or 6 hours a day.
Damn.
For a good year.
So you were playing other people's licks and stuff just to practice lead?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I was pulling up, you know, Eric Clapton and Jimmy Page and, you know,
all the greats,
you know,
yeah,
B.B. King and David Gilmour and all of my heroes, Santana, And I would just learn theirs, and then I would just jam on my own.
Right.
So I'm definitely kind of an amalgam of all of my heroes. You know, you can hear, you know, when I'm copping on a little Santana or a little Lindsey Buckingham or whatever. But regardless,
very cool.
I think it was about 3 months into that 6 month period where I had a really breakthrough show where like every lick worked and everything felt right. And I don't know, it gave me the confidence to say, well, you know, I can do this. And it's funny now because I mean, I think kind of overall I'm more known for being a lead guitar player than anything else.
Now you are. Yeah.
Really weird. You know, never started my career out thinking that would be the, you know,
never imagined that. Yeah. That's great though. So because you started as more of a rhythm guy, do you still enjoy, you know, playing rhythm guitar under someone else soloing and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an art to that, you know. There's the whole Keith Richards kind of, you know, art to, you know, laying the right chord, you know, at the right cadence. And I definitely do. It's all, you know, colors that you're painting with. So I still very much dig rhythm. You know, it locks in with the band.
That's a great way to put it.
Totally different art form.
So how about singing? Did you always want to be up front?
It was born out of everybody was too chicken to do it. When I was in high school bands, we would jam punk songs in the garage. Mm. I was 15 years old. We had this little punk band in Alabama. And I was like, man, you sing. No way, man. You sing. You know, and finally it was just like, okay, I'll sing. I was horrible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the first gigs I ever played were like parties in basements in high school.
Mm.
And I was one of the only ones that would just take the mic and start singing Van Halen, you know?
It sounds like singing and lead guitar kind of came out of necessity or, you know, more than desire almost.
Yeah, yeah.
At first.
I mean, but yeah, like the doorway into those things were necessity. Now, once I started singing, I really did fall in love with singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really studied the singers that I really looked up to, like Al Green and Otis Redding and B.B. King and Hendrix, I think, is never credited enough for being a really great vocalist.
No, I agree with that.
You know, and just sang, you know, and then kind of looked back over my childhood and realized I always really looked up to really great singers, you know.
Right. So, cool. So your latest album is 2014's Ragged and Dirty.
Yes.
And it's recently been announced that it might be nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah, it made what they call the big list,
mm-hmm.
Which is very exciting. You know, thousands of submissions are put in every year by record labels and producers, and that gets whittled down to the big list, which I can't remember how big that big list is, if it's like 30 or 50 or 80. But
out of thousands, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, that goes out to Grammy voters, and they vote, you know, and every voter picks their top five. And then, obviously, the most that were chosen for that top five become the five nominees. So,
right.
You know, there's this small chance, you know, that I could end up a nominee, which would be mind-blowing. I haven't made the big list in 10 years. I actually made the big list with my debut album. So, yeah, man, you know, it's exciting.
Definitely. Do you know when you find out if you make the top five?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not really counting down or crossing my fingers or anything like that. You know, it's a funny thing with art. You know, you make a film, you paint a painting, you write a novel, you write a record and record a record. You throw it out into the universe, and there is nothing you can do, bro. It's out there.
Right.
You know? And it's either going to stick with some people or it's going to fly under the radar and never get, you know, heard or seen or read. And so you can't attach any kind of expectations to that piece of art.
Right.
You have to make it, chuck it out in the universe, and just hope for the best.
It's hard to compare art, I guess. That's why you hear a lot of artists that kind of, you know, shrug off a nomination or whatever.
I'm certainly not shrugging it off because, to be honest, if I ended up on a nominees list, I would be just completely flattered. I mean, that's the pinnacle. You know, there's an artist out there that hold up their award on award night and go, this means nothing. You know, it's like, whatever.
They're lying.
It means everything. This is not a popularity. You know, the Grammys is not a popularity
right
contest. It's chosen by artists and producers. It's not chosen by the general public.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely
so
different.
It is our genre and our field's top honor. But at the same time, what I'm talking about is the precursor to, you know, any kind of announcement like that. You can't hold expectations or be like all tangled up inside over whether you're going to make it or you're not going to make it, because like you have no control over it.
Right. Exactly. This might be a tough question to answer because you're so involved in creating the album, but what do you think sets apart your album from the others that might be nominated?
That's a good question. You know, I think Tom Hambridge did a hell of a job producing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he asked me what kind of record I wanted to make, and I said, well, man, you know, I made all my records in the South, and I'd really like to go up north to Chicago and use real Chicago blues cats and give it a real nighttime Chicago kind of, you know, injected vibe.
Yeah.
I think maybe one track that might, you know, kind of set apart, you know, from other records is that he allowed me to do a 10-minute mood piece instrumental that's called Midnight Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
And it wasn't composed. It was an improv piece that I directed, you know, the musicians through the changes on the fly. We only played it once. We never played it again. What you hear is live one take, first time ever playing it, last time ever playing it in the studio. And it really captured the spookiness and the vibe. It was done at close to 3 a.m. The record was done. We had recorded all the parts.
So like nothing to lose at that point.
Yeah, like all the, you know, I still had to do vocals and whatnot, but like before we cut the musicians loose and said, okay, all your tracks are done, you know, thanks for coming. I said, man, while we got them here, can you let me just do this piece? I think it'll be something neat. And it ended up being the thing I'm the most proud of on the record. It's just, it's raw, you know, unscripted truth.
I was going to ask you what your favorite song was from the album, so there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, I guess that question would kind of tie into that, you know. I don't think many people take chances like that on records, and I think there's plenty of room for it, because if you have your focus songs, there should always be room to, you know, take a couple chances.
That's awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. So you kind of answered this, but do you record any tracks live together as a band in the studio?
Well, you know, I've had different bands for my two solo records, you know. I kind of... on my first solo record, Turquoise, I kind of hand-selected, you know, cats that I really loved. And then for the Ragged and Dirty record, Tom Hambridge, the producer, you know, put the band together around me. You know, he heard what I wanted and just really got the best guys. So the tracks actually go down live. You know, it is drums, bass, rhythm guitar, and sometimes even keyboards. And they'll go down live, yeah. You know, if the bass player had a flub, he'll just go in and fix that one little note.
Right.
But yeah, as far as going in and stacking tracks, try to do that as little as possible. You know, the only time that I would do that in making my records is if I went back to listen and maybe the bass tone or rhythm guitar tone wasn't quite what I was after. Then I'd go back and recut that take. But otherwise, yeah, we try and keep it pretty live, man. I'd say it's 85% live.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah, it just adds to that upbeat, you know, live feel, I think.
It definitely
comes across, yeah. And you cover the Spinners, I'll Be Around, on that album. Do you take inspiration from a lot of R&B and other genres besides blues?
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you could see my vinyl collection or my, you know, the music on my iPhone, you'd freak out. Because, I mean, it's everything. You know, I really love everything. From thrash metal to Delta blues to Nigerian jazz to, you know, tons of R&B. I mean, in my vinyl collection, it's probably heaviest on R&B. My fiance and I love Al Green and Curtis Mayfield and Bill Withers and, you know, everybody from that genre.
That's awesome. So do you have any new albums in the works?
I'm writing the next record right now, actually.
Oh, cool.
And I go in to record on February 1st in Nashville. The studio is called Welcome to 1979. And everything in the studio, gear-wise, is pre-1979. So we're going to make it old school. We're not doing it on a computer on Pro Tools where you can have a million takes,
right,
you know, at the click of a mouse. We're doing it on 2-inch tape, and we're using a bunch of old microphones and an old board, and it's going to be really cool. It's going to be how they made records in the 70s.
That sounds like so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was looking at your Facebook page, and in your description it reads, "One fan at a time, baby." It's a very dedicated approach. What is it about gaining a new fan that keeps you going?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's kind of a sign of the times, really. You know, I mean, we're living, obviously, like we're in the future. This is like the brave new world. So yeah. When, you know, and not to get too like metaphysical or esoteric, but you know, if you're in a time where there's factory processed food and there's, you know, this music that's made with computers and people actually able to tune their voice into being in pitch. I think what that does is it leaves a lot of people that are kind of putting a middle finger to all that and going, give me something real. I want real organic food. I want real music made with heart and soul and not computers. Like, I think it's a good time because it's bringing all of those people together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not following the masses. They're looking for the real thing. So, you know, a lot of times after a show, people will just come up and they'll say, man, thanks for, you know, carrying on this tradition of music and real, you know, thanks for being real. And I think that's what it's about. It's about kind of taking these people that are under the radar that follow, you know, heart and soul based music, and getting them together, you know, behind something, to rally behind a genre, you know. And I'm happy to do my small part in that. You know, there's a lot of artists out there doing it.
Absolutely. It's kind of a weird time, like you said, because technology is getting so advanced, but it's almost forcing people to want to go back to how it was, which is kind of cool.
I think it is cool, you know. I mean, I don't think it's a, you know, I don't think it's a fad that vinyl is coming back.
Mm-mm.
Vinyl sounds better. Vinyl doesn't sound better because I'm 43 and I'm lamenting on a gone, you know,
right,
childhood. It sounds better because it's analog.
Right.
You know, it's not zeros and ones being processed through a unit. And you know, what happens between the zero and the one?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what happens between the zero and the one. Vinyl. Because there's no space. It's completely linear. So, you know, it's things like that. Like, I don't want to listen to this tiny compressed music file, and I don't want to eat McDonald's. So there's a way to balance the two and enjoy, you know, some of the technology that really assists us and makes life easier while retaining some realness in the things that matter, like the things that go into your mouth and into your ears.
That's a great way to put it. It's balance. It's all about balance. Yeah, yeah, definitely. If you could jam with any musician you haven't had a chance to yet, who would it be?
Dead or alive?
Alive.
Alive.
Yeah.
Man, that is a really, really good question. Because I've been blessed. I've been able to jam with a lot of my heroes. I've jammed with Robert Randolph and Les Paul. And
nice. Yeah, that's why I like asking you guys, because you played with so many.
Yeah. You know, I would say since since B.B. King recently passed, he would have been my go-to. That would have been the pinnacle. Obviously, he's passed now, so I think that the next in line who has kind of inherited the throne is Buddy Guy,
mm-hmm.
and he's really the guy that taught me everything about dynamics. And so I would say, man, I would love to jam with Buddy Guy. That would be an unbelievable experience, and he would chop my head off in the first 10 seconds, but I would enjoy every bit of it.
It'd be well worth it. Have you had a chance to meet him at all?
I have not.
No.
And it's funny because on the latest album, on Ragged and Dirty, I got half of his band to play on that record.
No way.
You know? And he truly did. When I was 21 years old, I went up to Chicago and I played in his club on an open mic night. And I had asked the bartender, like, hey, does he ever come to his own club? And she was like, man, he's always on tour. He's in here maybe once a year.
Hmm.
And as soon as that was said, I mean, not an hour later, his guitar came out of the back room and he jumped up on the stage in this club of 200 people.
Oh, man.
And ripped our hearts out.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I had to play after him. Yeah.
So how'd that go?
Guy's story. But the one thing I took away from it was this is how you make everyone feel like you're playing just for them. And this is how you bring it down to a whisper and then kick them in the teeth, like turn the corner and just throw it into fifth gear.
Hmm.
So he taught me everything about dynamics that night.
Wow.
Everything changed for me. So,
damn.
He's a huge, huge inspiration to me, for sure.
That's crazy. That says a lot. So speaking of live shows, you're playing three shows in Kansas and Colorado this week and weekend.
Yes, sir.
John Barleycorn's in Wichita on Thursday, the 5th. The Gothic Theater in Inglewood, Colorado on Friday, the 6th. And The Bottleneck in Lawrence, Kansas on this Saturday, the 7th.
Yeah, buddy.
What can we expect at your shows?
Man, it's been a really cool show this year. It's kind of been the first time that I've gotten to play things from throughout my career, So
mm-hmm.
a couple Honey Tribe records, three Royal Southern Brotherhood records, a couple solo records. So I get to kind of, touch on each of those albums. There's a couple cool surprise cover songs that are in there. There's a little sit down segment where we do some acoustic stuff and kind of mellow it out.
Nice.
There's an instrumental or two. It's super high energy. It's a lot of fun. We really engage the crowd. I mean, it's just a good time. If you like the blues or classic rock or jam bands, this band is really a combo of those three kind of vibes,
Absolutely.
A little jamming, some blues, and there's some rocking out. So it's a good time.
That's my favorite. Can't beat it. Do you have a go-to set list or is it improvised?
This year, I really did put together a go-to set list
mm-hmm.
that we really kind of worked out and got it to where the night had a rhythm to it. So we've been running that one pretty strong. But, now we're in the latter part of the year, so going to make some tweaks and stuff. Got rehearsals coming up this week. So we're going to throw in some new stuff and some old stuff.
Nice.
And, and see how it goes.
Cool. And you mentioned jamming. Do you guys improvise a lot? Like, you might have a set list, but do you improvise within the songs?
Within the songs, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd say about a quarter to a third of the time, we'll bust open the middle or the ending of a song and just kind of ride it out and let it do its thing.
Let's see what happens. Nice. Yeah. You mentioned covers. Do you play any of your dad's tunes or what kind of covers do you do?
I've been known to pay my respects for sure, but there's a fine line between paying your respect and playing a song or maybe two, and then between that and it getting campy and doing like half the show. Like, that's my father's body of work, and
right.
Certainly there's a lot of bleed over fans from his world into mine, which is great and appreciated. So we always throw them a bone, and it's fun. Don't hang my hat on it.
Right. And you're definitely covering a lot of ground in just 3 days. I know your tour is going on after that as well. Do you still enjoy the road?
I love the road. I think what's happened is in my more mature years, where I used to kind of want to just run away from home.
Of course.
Go hit the road.
Yeah.
Now I really love home. And I owe that to my fiance, and being with my son and being engaged in his day to day is something that, I mean, he's a young man now, so those days don't last forever.
Right.
So it's not that I'm growing a dislike for the road. It's that I'm growing a real love for my home base. So touring a little bit less this year and next year. But only a little. I still love to play.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that balance thing again.
It is balance.
Very cool. Congrats on the engagement, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
you're involved in a few different charities, such as Play It Forward.
Yes.
Can listeners get involved in charities like that easily? Or?
Absolutely. I endorse three charities. One is called Play It Forward, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. We basically round up musical instruments, people that aren't using them, and get them into the hands of people that do want to play and they can't afford them. Play It Forward and all of the charities that I work with, you can access through my website, DevonAllmanBand.com, DevonAllmanBand, DevonAllmanBand.com. The other charities are Rock Can Roll, and that's up in the Northeast, and that is a really cool non-for-profit that specializes in getting food into local food pantries. They basically have people bring bags of non-perishable food items to the concerts and cool. turn it into, you know, a real love fest and helping out the needy at the concerts. And they do amazing work.
That's awesome.
And there's another one that is Strings for a Cure, and they take old guitar strings from famous people. A lot of people have done it. John Bon Jovi, my father, Greg Allman, mm-hmm. Myself. I think Derek Trucks has done it. Anyway, they take the old guitar strings and they fashion them into really cool and unique, one-of-a-kind pieces of jewelry. Yeah. And the money that is made goes into helping cancer victims, cancer patients. And it's just great. So, you know, I definitely stand behind all three. I think they do amazing work that really makes a difference, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Devin, I think that's it. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, brother.
Absolutely. All right, Mr. Devin Allman, thank you again so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Say the dog gonna have his day. Ain't so much as a boy.